It's good to be back together this evening, and I join with the others in welcoming you all. On my Sunday night slot, I've been going through some of the minor prophets, and we'll continue that tonight. As you see on the screen, we're going to talk about the prophet Habakkuk. Different ones that had songs were asking me before services what songs might be appropriate with the theme of the lesson, and I was thinking of a couple of points that come through, and it occurred to me later that a lot of what Habakkuk about is why are we suffering? And that song we just sang really fits that idea that we'll understand better by and by. But right now in this life, we go through things that we sometimes don't understand. And that is at the heart and soul of Habakkuk's story. I want to open up the study by showing you sort of an approximate timeline of the kings of Israel and Judah to just help us see where Habakkuk might fit in. You see, the northern kingdom of Israel had come to ruin around 721 B.C. there, and they were in Assyrian captivity. And the southern kingdom of Judah lasted a good time longer until about 606 B.C. They went into Babylonian captivity. And there's no specific statement in the book of Habakkuk that tells us during which king's reign he prophesied. We have that in some of the prophets, but we do have a statement from Habakkuk 1 and verse 6 that helps us place the approximate time of his work. Habakkuk 1 and 6 says, "Indeed, I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs." Now, God, in this particular verse, God is explaining to Habakkuk what's going on. And what's going on is God is raising up the Chaldean nation as a conquering nation. Well, the Chaldeans were the Babylonians. That's one of their cities was Chaldea. And a lot of times in Scripture and in history, the Babylonian people or the Babylonian nation is referred to as Chaldea, as because that's one of the areas that they sort of engulfed was the Chaldean area there along the Tigris-Euphrates River. So when he says, "I've raised up the Chaldeans," we know he's talking about the Babylonians. Well, when we look in human history, the one time that the Babylonians conquered on a scale that's described here in this passage where they're marching through the breadth of the known world and overthrowing one country after the other, the one time that happened was 606 B.C. to 536 B.C. That's the 70 years during which Judah was captive to Babylon, and the few years preceding that as Babylon rose to power. So, because Habakkuk was looking at modern events or events that were current to his day and saying, "Lord, what's going on?" And the Lord said, "Well, I'm raising up the Babylonians to conquer the world," we know that his prophesying had to have come here shortly before or perhaps in the early stages of the Babylonian conquest of Judah. So that helps us date when he would have prophesied. And there are times as we study a prophet that knowing when they prophesied is not necessarily going to give us a lot of specific information to help us understand the meaning of the book. But in this case, it's tremendously helpful. Because when Habakkuk starts asking, "Well, why is this nation conquering all these people and doing all these things?" we can understand what his question is about. Oh, he's asking about Babylon. And when he says, you know, why is Babylon, or he doesn't name Babylon, but why is this nation being used to punish people that are more wicked than they are, or rather that they're more wicked than the ones that they're punishing? We'll get into that as we proceed through the story. That question takes on a greater depth of meaning when we look at it through the lens of Habakkuk's time. So this is one instance where the time frame of the prophet really helps us have a better grasp on what he's talking about. With that said, now let's go into chapter 1 and begin reading. We'll just kind of hit the highlights of what the book is about. Chapter 1 now, beginning at verse 2. "O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear, even cry out to you violence and you will not save? Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds." Well, in general, it's obvious that the prophet is struggling with, why, God, are you allowing
evil things to happen? Why are you allowing things to happen in life that are not fair and that are not just? Well, we can get our hands around that kind of question because all humans of all ages have struggled with that question, and we wrestle with that question today. But when we look at this question through the lens of when Habakkuk was writing, when he talks about plundering and violence, he's talking about the violence of the Babylonian armies sweeping in and plundering these nations and stealing all their goods. Was there justice done? You know, God was allowing Babylon to attack Judah because Judah was an idolatrous people. They were no longer faithfully serving God. They'd become wholly given over to all manner of terrible idolatry and child sacrifice and all manner of perversions contrary to the law of Moses. So God was going to allow Babylon to punish Judah by overthrowing them. But Babylon was wicked. They were idolatrous. They served statues too, and they had immorality too. So how was that fair? How was that just? Well, that's Habakkuk's question. That's what he's asking about. How is it that justice never goes forth here? It's sort of interesting. We find Habakkuk and Job asking fundamentally the same question. When you read the book of Job, you read about Job losing all of his children. They died suddenly, losing his wealth, his livestock, and having sore illness fall upon him to the point that he thought he was going to die. And he basically, at different points in the book, says, God, why? Why do I have to suffer like this? And he asks that question at different times and in different ways. But there are instances where we see Job ask that question with an edge of an attitude. Like, you know, God, I'm righteous and you shouldn't be doing this to me. We don't find that edge with Habakkuk. What we find with Habakkuk is humility in the way he phrased the question. And here's the point I'm getting at. It's not wrong for us to struggle with why do bad things happen in life. That's not wrong for us to have that struggle. What's wrong is when we take on an attitude that says God is wrong. God has wronged me. What God is doing is not right. Because our faith compels us to recognize that God's going to make it all come out in the wash. And I don't mean in this life. I mean eternally. What we see with Habakkuk's story is, yes, God did use a wicked nation, Babylon, to punish some other people that were wicked. But he eventually punished Babylon too. And in Habakkuk's day, Babylon was such a powerful nation, he could not see them being brought to ruin. The walls that circumference Babylon's capital city were said to be in places so thick that you could have several houses inside it. The idea of an enemy nation coming and conquering then was unfathomable. And so Habakkuk sees all this and he can't see that God's going to equalize this all. And he's going to eventually punish Babylon for their sin. But God can see it. And that's the way it is with our struggles in life today. We see things and happen in life that aren't fair, and our loved ones get sick, and somebody loses a job, and someone else has a house burned down, and we don't understand why this all is happening. And what is hard for us to see is that at the end of life, and at the end of time, when in heaven God rewards the faithful, all these problems in life will seem like nothing. So it's sort of comparable to Habakkuk. As he looked into his future, he couldn't see when God was going to equalize it all. And we struggle to see that too. And it's not wrong that we have that struggle. What's wrong is when we don't meet it with faith. Reading on now, God gives his reply to Habakkuk as Habakkuk says, how can this all happen? And he says, look out among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Now, we'll continue reading through verse 11 in just a moment. But before we do, I want to notice some things. Number one, God says, if I explained to you what I was doing, you wouldn't understand it. And that's the way it is sometimes in life. There are things that are a part of what God allows as far as calamity happening in life and good people suffering hard times, that if God sat down and explained with us, look, here's what I'm doing, we couldn't get it. Because God sees an eternal picture with great clarity. And our minds are trapped to the view of this life, and we have to, by faith, see beyond this life. So that helps us a little bit. But there's something else that he says. He says, I am doing a work in your days. So God acknowledges what Babylon's doing. I'm up to this. I'm doing this. You may not understand what I'm doing, but this was a work of God. Now, hundreds of years later, we can look back on it, and it's easy to understand. Judah had become very wicked. God raised up Babylon to punish Judah. Babylon was very wicked. He raised up the Medes and Persians to punish Babylon. That's not hard to understand. But in Habakkuk's day, without seeing all that future that was unfolding, yet to unfold, he couldn't grasp that. And so God says, I'm doing this work. You just don't understand yet what I'm up to. And at the heart of everything God was doing was his punishment of sin. God's wrath against sin. Now, here's where we get the real essence of how the minor prophets can apply to our lives. In other lessons in this series of studies, we've talked about, you know, Habakkuk, the name's weird. How am I going to get something from his message? And I go through and read all this that has to do with Judah and Israel and Babylon and all these other nations that as such no longer exist, at least in the form that they existed in that day. So why does that have any meaning to me? Why should I study that? What we have here in Habakkuk 1, 5 through 11 is a passage that is quoted in the New Testament and applied to our lives today. And this will show us a profitable way we can study the prophets. In Acts chapter 13, Paul is preaching, and he said in verse 40 and 41, "Beware therefore, lest what has been spoken in the prophets come upon you. Behold, you despisers, marvel and perish, for I work a work in your days, a work which you will by no means believe, though one were to declare it to you." Well, that's a quotation of Habakkuk chapter 1. Paul is preaching to an audience of Jews about their rejection of Christ. He's preaching about sin and God's wrath. And in order to make the point that, you know, God may punish you for your sin if you're not careful, he cites the instance in Habakkuk where God is using Babylon to punish people for their sin and would later punish Babylon for their sin. And so he draws upon the historical circumstance of Habakkuk's book and the story that's told therein, and makes an application of that truth. God punishes sin, and he always does so fairly. And he applies that to the people in his audience. You reject Christ, just know that you do so at your own peril. Because the same God that punished sin in Habakkuk is going to punish sin now and in eternity. So this helps us see that the message of the prophets really is relevant to us because it lays out principles about God's dealings with man. Continuing now in Habakkuk 1, he said, "Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes, and he transgresses. He commits offenses, ascribing this power to his God." So God's describing the power that he had empowered the Babylonian king with to conquer. He describes their military prowess, which when you study the history of a Babylonian military conquest, it's much like what he describes here. Uncommonly fast horsemen, very swift cavalry, taking captive after captive after captive and making them slaves, capturing kings, capturing royal families, throwing them in prison, disregarding any call they may have to dignity, just treating them any way he chose. He had all this power at his disposal. But then God says he reached a point where he changed his heart. And he gave his pagan gods glory for his power. And that, my friends, is a very clear description of the king of Babylon. We can turn to the prophet Daniel and read about this. In Daniel chapter 4, we read of the king's changing attitude. The king spoke, saying, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by the mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" So he says, "I've done this by my mighty power and my majesty." And you go back in your minds to Habakkuk, and God said he'll change his mind. And he'll say this is all by the power of his gods. Well, in those eastern monarchies, one of the gods was the king. And in the king's mind, he is a pagan god. That's why they demanded worship. And so he is ascribing his own power to his own god. And in this case, it's himself. "I've done this by my power. I've built it by my might and my majesty." You can just see the guy getting ready to fall. And that's the part that in Habakkuk's day, it just looked impossible. But just a few years later, in Daniel's day, you could see the axe coming down, and it was going to get him at any moment. In Daniel chapter 5, Daniel records the downfall of Nebuchadnezzar's dynasty. It was actually his grandson who perished here. He said, "Because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. But when his heart was lifted up, and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him." Daniel there looking back on Daniel chapter 4, where the king was basically put out to pasture for a time and then restored to his power. But eventually, by the end of Daniel 5, that whole dynasty falls because God told Belteshazzar there, "You knew all this that had happened to your grandfather, and yet you still wouldn't listen and honor the true God of heaven." So what happened? The justice that Habakkuk craved so much that he just couldn't imagine happening finally happened. Babylon's 150-foot thick walls, what battering ram is going to bust through that? To God, that is nothing. So the Medes and the Persians divert the river, and they march down through the riverbed right under those thick walls, no problem at all, you see? With God, all things are possible. And what Habakkuk could not imagine happening in his day to make that all right eventually did happen. So Habakkuk comes with another question. God has basically replied, "Look, I'm using Babylon to punish Judah because Judah is sinful." Now notice the tone of Habakkuk's follow-up question. "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. You have appointed them for judgment. O Rock, you have marked them for correction." So he's acknowledging, all right, you've appointed Babylon to judge these other nations. Fine, I've got that. "You are pure of pure eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them?" So he says, okay, so you're using Babylon to punish people, but they are wicked and they're devouring others that may be wicked, but they're not as bad as Babylon. And this goes back to the part of the picture that Habakkuk just could not imagine happening. They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? So Habakkuk says, God, why is Babylon rising to power and conquering so much? And God's answer is, because I'm using them to punish these evil people. And so Habakkuk follows up by saying, well, now, wait a minute. So you're using Babylon to punish others, but they're more wicked. Are they going to just continue to prosper greatly? I mean, they're already prospering. They're putting out their nets and bringing in, and they're eating sumptuously, he says. They've got plenty. Is this going to just continue indefinitely? Like I said, Habakkuk cannot imagine Babylon falling because they were so powerful. Now notice his attitude after he posed this question. "I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he shall say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected. Now, there's some different ideas about this, see what I'll say when I'm corrected. And here's the one that I believe is correct. I believe that Habakkuk was facing questions from others. And this, a lot of scholars believe this about the book of Habakkuk, that a lot of people were coming to him as a prophet of God and saying, oh yeah, so you're a prophet of the true God of heaven? Well, then why is he letting Babylon do all this stuff? And so Habakkuk is taking their questions and putting them before God. And then he backs away and says, all right, I'm going to wait and see what God tells me how to answer my detractors, what to say when they correct me or when they argue with me about God. That sort of makes sense. Look at the humility. He's posed the question before God, and now he's going to stand patiently. I can almost see him flinching, kind of drawing up like, okay, I've asked, now he's fixing to tell me. And what I hear may not be pleasant, but I'm going to accept the answer, and I'm going to go tell others. With Job's questions, there was a sneer of subtle self-righteousness. Not always. But occasionally, it would come through like, you know, I don't deserve this. If I could call God into court, I'd argue and I'd prove that I'm righteous and I don't deserve all this that's happened to me. See, so there's sort of an attitude there. But with Habakkuk, it's just, I'm just going to wait and see what God says and accept whatever he says. That's an attitude of faith. And God's answer calls upon him to maintain that faith. Let's see what God said. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold, the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Now, number one, God says it's going to take a while for all this to unfold. It's yet for an appointed time. Habakkuk, you're wanting answers that's going to take all of life's questions and pile them up in one neat answer so that they're all answered and it's all done. But God says it's going to take time for this to unfold. And we would say the same thing about our questions today. God, why is my friend sick? Why am I sick? Why is this thing happening? Why did that tragedy happen? Why is there war? Why this? Why that? And we want that all explained right here, right now. And the truth of the matter is, we'll understand it by and by, because at the end of time, the righteous will be rewarded so richly that all these problems we've endured in this life will seem like nothing. Because life is just a vapor. It appears for a little time and then it vanishes away. And whatever problems, no matter how great their magnitude, those problems are just for the duration of that vapor. But how long is eternity? We can't count. That's why they invented words like infinity and eternity, because there is no quantity. It just keeps on going and keeps on going. And for eternity's duration, we enjoy great blessings. No wonder it makes us forget this vaporous time of trials here on earth. Now, in the heat of battle, when we're suffering, it's hard to remember that. It's hard to keep that perspective, because we're like Habakkuk. We want it all piled up and answered now, but we've got to take God's answer and say, you know what? It's going to take time. And we're just going to have to ride this thing out. And then God goes on and explains, look, here's how the proud person is living. Their soul is not upright. They're not living right. But the person who's just, the person who's right, how are they living? They're living by faith. We have a contrast. The manner of life we see in that person who's proud and rebelling against God is a manner of life that is sinful. It's not upright. But the manner of life of that person who is just before God, who's right before God, who will enjoy the eternal rewards from God, they are living their lives in a way that reflects their faith. Like Habakkuk, who's saying, I'm just going to stand and wait till I get the answer. I'm just going to ride this deal out. This statement about living by faith is not to suggest that a person becomes justified by only believing and not having any obedience in their lives. It's actually the opposite of that. It actually says a person who's going to be right before God must live their lives in a way that reflects their faith rather than living their lives in a way that's sinful. This passage in Habakkuk chapter 2 is also quoted in the New Testament. In Galatians 3, he's quoting it to explain that we have to trust in God if we want to be saved. He said, "No man is justified by the law in the sight of God. It is evident, for the just shall live by faith." It wasn't Moses' law that made those people right before God. It was their faith in God, their trusting in God, and subsequent submission to God that made them right in His sight. It had nothing to do with the rituals of the law per se. It was about their relationship with God, wherein they had faith in Him, they trusted in Him, and in that faith they submitted to what God asked of them. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 38, he quotes that same passage. "Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him." Here we have a contrast between two manner of life. In one manner of life, that person is living in a way that shows their faith. In another manner of life, that person is drawing back from what God asks of them. The just living by faith doesn't mean that that person mentally believes in God but is not obedient. That concept is foreign to this passage. And that's not what God is teaching Habakkuk. God is teaching Habakkuk, you guys are going to have to hunker down and be faithful to see this play out the way you want it to play out. He's not telling them they don't have to obey God. He's telling them the opposite, that they must. And the New Testament scriptures apply it in that way, that our salvation before God depends on us learning the lesson that Habakkuk had to learn. You're going to have to buckle down and trust God and follow Him faithfully all your life. Until we pass the time of our lives here on earth when all this injustice shall end, and on the day of judgment there shall be perfect justice from God. And for all the inequality and the disparity that people suffer in this life, judgment day is the perfect equalizer. Never forget, the perfect equalizer. So on the one hand, the prideful person does not live an upright life. But the just person lives a life that's defined by their faith. Taking that to Hebrews quotation of Habakkuk, the person who displeases God draws back. They pull back from God rather than trusting in God the way Habakkuk did. But the just person lives their life in a way that shows their faith, just like Habakkuk did. So there's a real important message here in Habakkuk chapter 2 that says when life brings troubles your way, you've got to buckle down and trust God and stay faithful. From this point forward, woe is pronounced against those who do evil. Indeed, because he transgresses by wine, he's a proud man, and he does not stay at home because he enlarges his desire as hell, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied. He gathers to himself all nations and heaps up for himself all peoples. Will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, "Woe to him who increases what is not his, how long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges." So here there seems to be woe pronounced not only against the sinful of Israel, but against Babylon's insatiable appetite to conquer other nations and steal their goods. Will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you? And will you become, and you will become their booty because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of the people shall plunder you because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. Because Babylon had plundered so many and mistreated so many, they would become victims of plunder and ill treatment. And their great and glorious city would be brought to shame and ruin. Even in olden times, it had fallen to such ruin that it actually become a dwelling place for wild animals. It was almost like a game reserve where some would go and try to hunt the wild animals that lived there because the city was laid desolate. Why? God's wrath against sin. God's wrath against them for their insatiable appetite to conquer other peoples. And then chapter 3, after God explained that woe would come against Babylon, that Habakkuk's going to have to trust God to work this out in a way that's right, Habakkuk prays a prayer. In Habakkuk 3, 2 through 5, O Lord, I've heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden. Before him went pestilence, and fever followed at his feet, describing in this prayer God's greatness and his power. And look at what he asked of God. So you're going to bring wrath against people in sin? In wrath, remember mercy. Now you think of the impact of these words. Here's a man watching wicked Babylon saying, when's God going to give them what they deserve? And when God says, well, it's coming, then Habakkuk's heart turns soft and asks God that in his wrath he would also show mercy. Now that's a good attitude of a faithful servant of God. Habakkuk continues with a song of praise to God in chapter 3, verse 17 through 19. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet, and he will make me walk on my high hills. Now, all this that he says about there's no blossom, there's no fruit, there's no olives, there's no goats, all that's gone. All that goes back to the language you'll find over and over in the prophets where God was warning Judah when they were headed into the tank, so to speak, towards idolatry. He was warning them, you guys do this. Now, y'all go ahead and do this, and here's what's going to happen. I'm going to ruin your crops. I'm going to take your flocks. You're going to suffer want. You're going to run out of food supplies, and you're going to suffer miserably. He warned them. One prophet after another warned them. Well, they continued off into idolatry, and that's what begun to happen. And now Habakkuk is living in this time where they're running out of supplies, and hear his faith. Though we run out of food, I'm going to rejoice in God. I'm going to serve God faithfully. Because now he had his instructions from God. You're going to have to wait, and in time this is all going to shake out. In the meantime, Habakkuk might suffer. Others who were righteous might suffer. But at the end of life, they would move on to a reward so sweet that, as the scriptures say, the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that will be revealed. Our light affliction, which is but for a moment, the Bible says, works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So Habakkuk looks at the want of food and the failure of his nation that he loves so dear as a light affliction. For whatever moment it must last, he would gladly suffer it, but rejoice in his relationship with God, because that had not just temporal promise, that had eternal promise. That was the eye of faith that God asked Habakkuk to see things with. And that's the faith with which we must view our trials in life. Going back to a passage we've used in conclusion of other prophet studies, Acts 13 and 27, they that dwell at Jerusalem and their rulers, because they knew him not, nor yet the voices of the prophets which are read every Sabbath day, they have fulfilled them in condemning him. This passage looks at the sum total message, the voice of the prophets, and warns us to not turn a deaf ear to them. Habakkuk's voice is part of the voice of the prophets, and we need to listen carefully to the lessons that he teaches. With that, we conclude our study of the hour. I hope it's been a blessing to you and edifying to you. If you're not a Christian this evening and we can assist you in becoming a Christian, of course we'd love to do so. Or if as a Christian you need the prayers of the church,
We stand ready to help you in that way. If we can help you in either way, please come while we stand and sing.